This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. After deadly attacks along the Gaza border, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu declares
Hamas is ISIS.
And Israel is increasing airstrikes on the Gaza Strip and sealing it off from food, gas, and water. It's believed about 900 people in Israel and nearly 700 people in Gaza have been killed since the conflict began this weekend with a large-scale surprise attack by Hamas in retaliation for Israel's years-long blockade on Gaza. CBS's Holly Williams is in Israel.
In Sderot. The air raid alarm sent our team scrambling for the nearest bomb shelter, less than 2 miles from the border with the Gaza Strip.
We just heard a whole series of very large blasts, and we ran to take cover here.
Israeli communities close to Gaza, where the Hamas militants are based, took direct hits.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby tells CBS News there is no plan to put U.S. military boots on the ground there.
The president still believes in the promise of a two-state solution, in peace and justice for the Israeli people as well as for the Palestinian people. And the president knows that Hamas doesn't speak for the Palestinian people.
According to a White House official, tomorrow afternoon, President Biden will deliver remarks on the terrorist attacks in Israel. Mr. Biden, according to the White House, has spent yesterday and today being voluntarily interviewed at the White House as part of the special counsel investigation into classified documents. The Writers Guild of America officially approves a new contract. CBS's Matt Piper reports it comes after its members were striking for months.
Hollywood writers overwhelmingly voted to approve a hard-fought new deal with studios, officially ending one of the industry's longest ever strikes. The WGA says 99% of its thousands of members voted in favor of the new contract, allowing them to return to work. Members were on strike for 148 days, looking for better pay, protections from AI, and more. The group that Reps Studios says the contract represents meaningful gains and protections for writers. Matt Piper, CBS News.
The Nobel Prize for Economics goes to Harvard's Claudia Golden for research on the workplace gender gap. What is orange all over and weighs more than a ton? It's an entry at the annual World Championship Pumpkin Weigh-Off in Northern California that could produce at least 687 pies.
2, 7, 4, 9! Oh my God, Half Moon Bay is in the record books. That's a world record! World record!
And it was grown by Anoka, Minnesota horticulture teacher Travis Ganger. Stocks ended higher on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Like the Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation is reminding residents to stay alert on the roads at night as the sun begins to set earlier. The DOT reminds residents 50% of accidents happen at night due to reduced visibility, and with the earlier sunsets, more residents will still be on the road when it gets dark. Drivers should make sure all their lights are working and aimed properly, the windshield is clean, and stay alert for pedestrians or deer on the road in addition to other drivers. A veteran who went missing last week only to be found in Santa Fe, New Mexico, still hasn't returned to Eau Claire County, despite being court-ordered to reside at a group home in Toma. Shane Helmbrecht is reportedly missing again, as his attorneys, his family, nor the Eau Claire Sheriff's Department have had any contact with him. The sheriff's office ordered him to return to Wisconsin within 48 hours, where the district attorney will file a request for a warrant. Helmbrecht was living in a group home after being found not guilty by reason of insanity in a 2016 homicide case. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Buck Tussle has been providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin before it was cool. Now we're celebrating the company and the bug that started it all. In honor of our mascot, Buford's birthday, and the anniversary of our company, we are giving new customers free service until 2024, and 5 current customers will win $1,000 each. For more details and to get Buck Tussle internet today, call 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924. 4.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It's the Wild West of how students are using generative AI.
As educators, there's sort of 6 responses that we can have to these new tools. We could ignore it. Mm-hmm. We could ban it. We can try and outfox it. We can teach about it. We can actually teach it, or we can teach with it. I think the most exciting one, of course, is to teach with it.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Albaugh Show, weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Albaugh Show on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5 The Tap.
Stories and the ones we couldn't get to today. Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Boy, what a crazy, bizarre, just outrageous kind of a day. I got to tell you, I got lots of responses from people talking about what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on across the globe. I got to tell you, just some weird stuff in talking with folks. I'll tell you, it's... There's just lots of chaos, lots of turmoil, all the stuff going on in Israel and Palestine, more death, more destruction, more misery, and I condemn it all. I condemn it all. And here's the thing: I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about something that I don't know enough about or I have any real absolute solutions for. But I do find it amazing. I do find it quite interesting that my Republican friends are all about, well, we're going to blame Joe Biden for everything. Let's blame everything on Biden. I find it interesting that the head of the RNC sees it as an opportunity. I find it interesting that Tim Scott is blaming Biden. I find it interesting that Trump says, would have never happened. Never happened if it were me on the watch. And again, it's this, everything's Biden's fault. Every bad thing that happened is Biden's fault. Every good thing that's happened, well, that's because of it's just the world that we live in. And I found it interesting Trump saying, well, things all over the world, things are not what they were just 3 years ago. And you're right, Donald, things aren't what they were 3 years ago. The world has opened up again. And again, going out, telling the big lie again, American tax dollars are funding these attacks. No, they're not. And this is how come the frame isn't, Jared Kushner caused this? How come that's not the frame? Because if you remember, Kushner was supposed to have brought us world peace. Kushner was supposed to have fixed all of this. Maybe now would be a good time to have a confirmed ambassador. Kind of a thought. Now might not be a bad time to,
instead of having an acting ambassador, have somebody who actually, is confirmed? I mean, the sad reality is we can't get simple functions of our government accomplished. Can't seem to get that done. And of course, Tommy Tuberville still holding our country hostage. But, you know, what do you expect from where we are in this moment? Now, Chris Christie says the House Republicans are being irresponsible. Yeah, of course they are. Because as we speak, they're still trying to figure out how to do basic functions of government. And they're saying, look, you know, we're going to send aid to Israel. How's that going to happen when the people who control the purse strings are dysfunctional? You know, it's one of these things where you look at the space that we're in and the amazing time that we're in. And the fact that we, again, can't seem to get the basic functions of government accomplished. That's what's frustrating to me. That's what's angering to me. That's what, at some point, I hope, I'm just throwing this out here. I hope we get something done. But I guess I don't have much faith in what the Republicans have put forth. I guess I don't. And look, I go back to where I started. I don't have an answer for what's going on in the Middle East. Nobody does. This has been going on my entire life and longer. But I fear the rhetoric that's being ramped up right now, the rhetoric that we're hearing right now, the scary stuff that's coming from the right, the authoritarians, the Netanyahus, the Trumps, the people who are ready to, you know, to make themselves dictators, kings, to install themselves permanently. These kind of things are their excuses to come down with a heavy hand. Their excuses to usurp democracy. Their excuses to consolidate power. And I was having a conversation with someone today, and I said, look, you know, the thing that really worries me, the thing that really kind of frightens me is, you know, we're one catastrophe away from an authoritarian taking over. All of the conditions seem to be moving us in that direction. And you know, over the weekend, I was talking to my son about, you know, this TV show from when I was a kid, All in the Family. You know, Archie Bunker. You know, people my age know who Archie Bunker was. And he was a caricature of the point was, is he was supposed to be the racist, the homophobe. He was supposed to be the extreme. He was supposed to be the cautionary tale. And as I was explaining it to my son, because of course they have never seen, you know, what I grew up watching. So I was explaining, you know, who Archie Bunker was, and I saw, you know, because there are some clips now floating around on social media. And I said, look, you know, Archie Bunker is right now, he's a Trump supporter. He would be MAGA. And because none of this stuff changes, it just gets a different uniform, a different identity. And as I was explaining, you know, the Bunker era, you know, you can look at as either, you know, like I look at the book 1984. It's either a cautionary tale. It's something, there you go, whoa, I read this. This is all bad. We shouldn't do this. We should use this as the warning signs for what could happen. And then there's the other side of the coin that go, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. This is a playbook. This is what we should do. And, you know, I look at Archie Bunker now almost in the same vein as, you know, he was a caricature of what, you know, a racist, a homophobe, a bigot, all those things were, and it's something you didn't want to be. But now there are people who go, no, that's the guy. And I got to tell you, I'm a bit concerned of where we are. And as we were going through, you know, some of the things that the conversations that, you know, back in the 70s, you could have these kind of hard conversations, through television. They did. Archie Bunker's, All in the Family was, groundbreaking. We're not that society anymore. We don't seem to have these spaces to have, hard conversations anymore, to deal with hard problems anymore. Or at least find some solutions to. It seems like we're in our camps. We've got our talking points. We've got our social media crowds. We've got our bubbles. And never shall we interact with others. And this is where I'm concerned about my kids and their future. Because it seems like, I can't help but think, especially with the Trump rhetoric today, I can't help but think one crisis, one terrible catastrophe, one tragedy, and someone like Trump, someone like Netanyahu, some authoritarian figure, grabs hold of this country or countries around this world, because we're making that shift. And we now have fascism on the rise. We now have corporate run right-wing strangleholds where democracy be damned, rights of we the people be damned, rights of the minority be damned. Mob rule will be the rule of the day. And that should frighten everyone. Because at some point, everyone fits into a minority category somewhere. It's just not maybe today. So I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I got lots to get to, questions, comments, especially about, will we have a speaker? Will there be one by the end of today, tomorrow, next week, next month? Will they, could they, can they, might they? Who knows? Gonna take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I tell you, it's frustrating and angering where we are in this moment. But I want to hear your thoughts. Let's go to the phones. We've got Julie on line 2 in Minnesota. Julie, how are you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to pretend I've got some PhD in the Mideast either, but I just wanted to say one thing and then another couple of quick comments. Don't we all know that the murder and targeting of innocents, of civilians on either side, is morally wrong?
Yes.
And I think that you could also argue, yeah, but it has to be done anyway. That's kind of a different topic. But can we at least agree that it's wrong?
Yeah.
At least that's the way I feel. I heard on the radio today that Rand Paul, I didn't know we didn't have an ambassador to Israel.
We have an
I did
ambassador.
Hear that Rand Paul is holding it up.
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing that I've heard is that, forgive me if I mispronounce his name, is it Tupperville?
Yeah.
I didn't know we didn't have a secretary of the Navy. I wasn't aware of it. And here is this huge battleship that I that you see on television. And we do not have a commander of the Navy. That kind of blows my mind. So, it's just kind of incomprehensible that we have a politician that doesn't want to appoint a commander of the Navy because he does not want women in the armed forces who have been raped to be able to have an abortion.
Well, I would argue he doesn't want women in the armed forces. Let's start there. And then go to the next part of it as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to express that and thank you for the opportunity.
I appreciate it, Julie. Thanks so much. That's the sad reality. You got Tupperville. And look, these Republicans, they wrap themselves around the troops every chance they get. Every photo op they get, every time they have a chance to get their picture and then mug it up. But when it comes to actually doing the support and actually doing something to help, not so much at all. Let's go to Steve on line one in Chicago. Steve, how are we doing today?
Fine, thank you. And I wanted to make a couple of points. It is the irony here that given this outbreak of conflict in Israel, that it perhaps could push people like Tupperville and others to sort of move this along and actually secure that legislation in terms of promotions and whatnot, so that we could make sure that our military has been shored up given this crisis situation. Because right now, he looks like he's the guy who's standing in the way of securing American military might and security. So, perhaps there is a little bit of a silver lining there. Secondly, I do think your analysis with regard to All in the Family is an interesting one. I mean, Norman Lear originally created the Archie Bunker character to be this blue-collar guy who never got beyond high school. He's terribly unsophisticated. He's full of superstition and prejudice and hates just about everybody who isn't like him. The irony was that, Lear thought that, this could be easily the bad guy that everybody could look at and laugh. When they looked at the audiences, it turns out that half of the people actually hated Archie. The other half liked him and were agreed with him.
Yep.
But everybody was watching. So Lear put on, this great show. But he did miscalculate because he thought it was okay. Everybody was going to disagree with Archie. No, it turns out half the country actually, thought as Archie thought, and it does say something about just how far we've come and how far we have to go. And you're absolutely right. It's this kind of thing because we have instability in India that's moving towards nationalism. You have this, all sorts of potential crises in China. You have what's going on in the Middle East. You have the Ukraine. And the Americas were not immune to this because, again, the migrant crisis is all a part of the instability that exists in Central and South America. So you're absolutely right. I mean, in prosperous times, Western democracies will exalt the notion of liberty and the freedoms that come with it and what all that means. But when times get tough and crises come along, it's amazing how quickly we're willing to, sweep our freedoms under the rug for the all for the promise of some security and stability, and that's what authoritarian regimes promise you. When you're afraid that you're going to lose something or you're threatened, somebody who comes along and says, "I'm willing to protect you, and I'm going to tell you exactly who the bad guys are and what we're going to do to them, and all I need is for you to sign away some of your rights and freedoms and." I'll be there for you. It's amazing how many people will fall for that. And think about what has transpired in our lives. I mean, if you would have told people on 9/10, the day before the 9/11 attacks, would you be willing to sit still for the following sorts of reforms in government? Most people would have said, "Are you out of your mind?" No, a Department of Homeland Security, and all of the things that come with a police state and a surveillance state, and everything. Of course not. 9/11 comes along, we're all signing up for that, except for a few sane people who said, wait, we might not want to go down that road quite as quickly. So, yeah, I don't think that we're beyond this stage, you know, the whole end of history thing, you know, that happened in the 90s, believing that after the Cold War was over, the world was just going to settle into this global economy in which we all realized that getting along with one another was the most important thing, because it was the bottom line interest for everybody. What's good for them is good for us. We trade with each other. We don't shoot at each other. Now it turns out that people still function with that lizard side of their brain sometimes, and we're still tribal. We still hate the guy who doesn't look like us and doesn't share our religious beliefs and has a different history. And we're not willing to forgive and forget with regard to cycles of violence. And that's the people who study this, that's the thing that they all agree upon. They have differences on a lot of these issues, but they agree that where there's a cycle of violence, where you killed my brother, sister, mother, father, whatnot, then I'm going to kill yours. And then of course, if you've killed mine, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to feel the need to retaliate again. And that's exactly what we've been seeing during our whole life, during our entire lives in that part of the world. And let's face it, there are people from outside of those societies that have a vested interest in keeping that conflict going. And they fund it and they support it. And I don't know, like you said, I have no idea what the answer is, except to say that if you could somehow take 10% of the radicals out of the equation in both the Palestinian community and in the Israeli community that are just that don't see anything but war and hatred, that would be the only solution. I firmly believe that there's a hope for 80% of the people there if they could just remove that 10% of the extremes on either side of that equation. But again, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. No. The only thing I know is poor people are a lot of poor people are going to die. That's all I know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's never the people who are in charge.
Nope.
I mean, Netanyahu and his family and others, they are not out there on the front lines. You know, he may support the occupied territories. He's not going to live in them. And the same thing with regard to the leaders of Hamas. Leader of Hamas lives in Qatar. His kids go to the best schools in the world. And they drive cars that most people could never afford, and let alone the people living in the occupied territory. So, yeah, I mean, there's a vested interest in keeping this going.
Yeah, I appreciate the thought, Steve. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
Let's go to John on line 3. John, how are we doing today?
Oh, doing just peachy. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Did you hear, what I read this morning on the electronic news, that the Japan News Service reported that there are no Israeli defense forces around the Hamas breach for several hours.
Yeah, I've heard a bunch of stories, like Egyptian intelligence told them this was coming. I think you hear all of this stuff all the time to make it sound like, you know, someone wanted it. And maybe, I don't know. Would it surprise me if it was allowed to happen? No, wouldn't surprise me at all. Because this is, again, this is...
I mean, Christopher Miller did that to us in this country on January 6th. He told our defense people to stand down in Washington, D.C. and let the Trumpsters go rampant. Okay? So if it's done then, it can be done in 9/11. It can be done now in Israel or whatever. Intentional. Intentional failure. Just like Robert McNamara for Gulf of Tonkin and, you know, Vietnam.
Yeah, sadly, again, I don't know that to be the truth, but I wouldn't doubt it.
You don't know. Nobody knows the truth, especially when they're fed full of untruth or half-truth.
No,
that's what this country is all about.
Appreciate it.
Star Spangled Banner, God and King, and whatever. Nonsense.
Thanks for your thoughts, John. Appreciate it. No, look, yeah, I heard all the same stories, though, that, you know, Egyptian intelligence, you know, told them, you know, just like here on, you know, 9/11, you know, you had the, you know, August 6th PDBs, you had, you know, all kinds of intelligence, you know, saying, hey, it's coming. Was it allowed to happen? Well, we may never know. I can't say, and I'm not going to say one way or another definitively, yes or no, this happened, this didn't happen. You know, it's up to individuals. But there are no hard facts to say. But the reality is there is the August 6th presidential daily briefing that said bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S. with planes. seems pretty specific. But again, you know, all I do know is that rich people are going to make a lot of money. And I go back to Smedley Butler. War is a racket. Rich people get richer. Poor people get dead. And the people who end up dead are usually the poor and the poor working class. The wealth class of this country and this globe and of history, they're not the ones who generally are the ones who do the bleeding, suffering, and dying. That's us. And the sooner that we come to the reality that it's us, and maybe we need to do something about it, maybe the better. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Got lots to get to. Quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1823. That was the day abolitionist and women's suffragist Mary Ann Shad Carey was born. Her parents were free blacks of color in the slave state of Delaware. They were involved with many prominent abolitionists and active in the Underground Railroad. The family moved to Pennsylvania, where Mary and her siblings were educated in Quaker schools. As a young woman, Mary became a teacher and returned to Wilmington, Delaware, where she opened a school for black children. Once the Fugitive Slave Law was passed in 1850, Mary and many other free blacks fled to Canada to safely continue their abolitionist work. She opened a school for fugitive slaves in Windsor, Ontario, just across the river from Detroit. Mary soon came under fire in the local press for insisting the school be racially integrated. She responded by starting her own newspaper, The Provincial Freeman. She and her husband Thomas often traveled to the United States to continue their anti-slavery work. They were present at John Brown's 1858 Constitutional Convention. Mary worked with Osborne Perry Anderson to publish his 1861 memoir, A Voice from Harper's Ferry. Anderson had participated in Brown's raid and was the lone African-American survivor. After her husband's death, Mary returned to the United States with her children to help recruit black soldiers for the Union Army. Once the Civil War was over, Mary moved to Washington, D.C. to teach. She enrolled in Howard University, where she earned a law degree. There, she joined the National Women's Suffrage Association and worked with Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. She continued to advocate for civil rights and women's equality until her death in 1893. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two.
Here's my suggestion for stopping the ultra-right-wing loopiness coming out of the mouths of Republican officials. Hearing aids. I'm convinced that the wacko blatherings of Matt Gaetz, the ravings of the QAnon cult, Trump's tantrums, and so many others are the result of a tragic neurological disconnect. This affliction lets their tongues wag impulsively, but their ears don't pick up the noise, so they're unaware that they are prattling nonsense. The current chaos in Congress's Republican caucus is one embarrassing example of this eardrum contagion, but it has spread throughout the country, even to local right-wing officials. In Shasta County, California, for example, the Republican-controlled Board of Supervisors recently lurched into full-tilt screwballism, frenetically warning that Japanese forces are weaponizing mosquitoes to be, quote, flying syringes to mass-inject Americans. See? No way they would have said that if they could hear themselves. Which brings us to the fount of present-day right-wing goofiness, Texas state officials. Their latest tone-deaf ploy is by Governor Greg Abbott, who wants to divert our people's tax dollars from public schools to exclusive private academies, subsidizing the rich class he serves. He's tried to do this before, but he fails, since even conservative Republicans in rural counties don't want their public education turned over to profiteering corporate chains. So this time, Greg is hyping privatization as a, quote, religious freedom issue, piously preaching that, quote, God created us to have family units, not state bureaucrats, make decisions for families. This is Jim Hightower saying, sheesh, does Abbott even have ears? Or maybe he's hoping that we don't have memories, for we have heard him howling constantly that the state, not families, must make every woman's personal reproductive decisions. Let's buy a hearing aid for him and set it on a constant replay loop.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember we had some of the Writers Guild folks on, and they got a temporary agreement. Well, they have now ratified that temporary agreement. 99% of the folks with the Writers Guild of America approved a new 3-year contract with the major studios. You may remember about 5 months ago they went on strike. Now this is behind them. And look, as I said, this is a big freaking deal, because this is the first victory in that new front line of the class war against AI, robotics, the brave new world. They were able to say, look, you know what? AI is not going to replace working people. This is a huge victory. Much like, you know, on Friday, there was the announcement out of the UAW that the battery plants are going to be in the master agreement at the UAW in the Big Three. Big freaking deal. Lots of good stuff going on. Now, as we talked about on Friday, the Mac workers reached an agreement. There was a tentative agreement, and I had asked, what do you think the chances of that agreement being accepted? And my guest said, don't know. Well, today we found out. And those workers are now on the picket line, as nearly 4,000 people in Macungie, Pennsylvania, members of the United Auto Workers at Mack Truck, have taken to the picket line. And here to talk about why they're on the picket line, I've asked Tim Herzog to come talk with us. He's a committee man, acting shop chair of UAW Local 677. Tim, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So, on Friday, all excited. You know, people I was talking to, hey, they've got an agreement. This sounds good. What happened?
So there were some sticking points in our local agreement. They want to add a half hour to our work day. Right now, we work a straight 8-hour day. We get paid for lunch. They're looking to get more productivity off the line. So they want to run the actual lines 8 hours a day and pay us a half hour straight time to be there. They don't want us leaving the property, so they're going to pay us for our lunch. But, you know, that extra half hour, along with being straight time, it really throws a wrench into our employees' families' lives. You know, we got people trying to get kids to daycare, and a 6 o'clock start really isn't feasible for a lot of people. That was one of the main hangups. We had some other local language. They want to take away some bidding rights. They only want us to be able to bid once a year, changing jobs. And we have what we call Article 9, where we're able to change shifts. If your seniority allows you to bump shifts, they want to suspend that for 18 months. Just a lot of things that they want to do with our seniority.
Yeah.
And all the way around, the general consensus was that the pay was a little light. So we pretty much, I believe all the plants voted it down. 73%.
Wow. It must have been really unacceptable to get that kind of a rejection. Because look, you know, all this stuff comes down to wages, hours, conditions. You know, I talk to people all across the country, and you look, we're at a time of high inflation. We're at a time when, you know, milk and eggs and butter, sugar and shoes, all that stuff costs a little bit more, and the wages have to keep up. And as long as wages, you know, are more than what the cost of inflation is, life stays okay, standard of living stays the same. But, you know, over the last couple of years, that hasn't been the reality. So it's time to play catch up, isn't it?
Absolutely. That was one of the other main things on our master. You know, COLA remains suspended again. I believe this would be at least our second straight agreement where it's been suspended. You know, when I started back in 98, our top rate was, I believe, $20.07. Right now, the top rate, 25 years later, it's $29.58. It hasn't kept up. And,
you know, I hear this a lot. I know in my own experience, you know, I started in the LTL trucking industry back in the late 80s. And, you know, starting rate was $15 an hour, went up to 18 something, you know, back in the late 80s. And you fast forward, you know, 30 some years later, it's only a couple of bucks more.
and inflation's gone up. The cost of everything's gone up, and the stagnant wages, the declining benefit, the disappearing pensions, you know, more wanting more work out of workers with less reward has been the constant. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what industry you are in. It seems to be the constant across the working class of this country. So do you get a sense, as I do, that finally people have had just enough? And that coming out of the pandemic and with all this inflation and all this stuff, and that people just have had it, especially as we're seeing strikes that are being successful and organizing campaigns that are being successful. Do you think that people have just had it?
100%. I know Local 677 has had it. It's tough. You know, I know that we've raised the price of our trucks several times since the pandemic. And our raises, they're just not keeping pace. When we didn't have COLA the last contract, it really hurt us. And to not have COLA protected raises, the proposed raises were 10% up front, 2% for each of the next 3 years, and 3% for the fifth year. Along with it being a 5-year deal, people were skeptical of that. And then the raises weren't COLA protected. And we got burned on a 4-year deal. So combine the not at least even being COLA protected, and the 5-year deal, that was a really tough sell for our guys.
Explain what COLA is for folks who may not know, and then explain, you know, what having, you know, the previous COLA in the contract that came out of the pandemic, what that would have meant to your wages and to your members.
So COLA is your cost of living adjustment. I used to know the formula very well off the top of my head, consumer price index. But basically, our wages stayed stagnant, and it would have kept us in, it would have kept our dollar buying power a lot better. We probably lost about $4.50, $5 an hour not having COLA. So I believe our last two raises in the contract we're finishing right now were 2% raises, 2-1% raises. It killed us.
Yeah, see, this is something I've talked about numerous times. You know, when my grandparents were in the heart of their working lives, and they go back to the 70s when we had that hyperinflation, when we went through that stagflation period, you know, the middle 70s, you know, you had really high inflation. My grandfather got, you know, 2-3 raises a year. I think 1975, he said he got 3 raises because of the formula and because, you know, inflation was high. And they made sure that, you know, the buying power, their standard of living, their wages didn't get eroded by inflation. That's what the unions fought for. And by taking that cost of living adjustment away, it has eroded the buying power of jobs that were the gold standard of the working class, like at Mack Truck, like at Ford or Chevy or GM or any of those places, or even in the LTL trucking industry that was unionized, you know, at 85% when I first started. You know, these were the gold standards of the working class. It's what built the most prosperous working class in history. And to have it eroded by inflation, to have it stagnant year after year without reasonable raises, they just turn them into McJobs, don't they?
Absolutely. We're having trouble keeping pace with the warehouses around here. Lehigh Valley's, like, you know, pretty much a warehouse hub, being on proximity to I-78. Like, you can go to U-Line and get $28 an hour, you know, and I feel like the company's lost sight that building these trucks is a skilled trade job, you know, and it's, when I started in 98, we had about 8,000 people apply for 350 jobs. Now we have trouble filling, you know, a class of 25 on a Monday. It speaks volumes for where we're at as far as pay scale.
Yeah. Well, it's not that gold standard anymore. And, you know, look, I've had that conversation with hiring folks in the job that I've worked at. You know, why don't people want these jobs anymore? Because you're not paying them as you did in the past. This isn't that better job, that union job, better life frame that it used to be in the past. And that's why I think you guys have taken to the picket line and said, look, we're going to restore the prestige of this job. We're going to restore the standard of living. We're going to restore our position in this economy. And I think that's important because we need this moment to reclaim some of to redistribute wealth back into the hands of the people who create it.
Yeah, you know, so they've been selling these trucks. Half our workforce is anywhere between 70 and 75% on the pay scale because we have a wage progression. You know, that's been going on for 10 years. This company's been charging 100% for that labor for 10 years. They're killing it, and it's time to start sharing the wealth.
Yeah. You know, I look at the big three. You know, their CEOs are making in the, you know, $20+ million a year range. You know, where's your guy at?
I honestly don't know. I should have researched that.
Do you think he's working for $20 an hour? Like, yeah.
What's that?
Do you think he's working for $20 an hour?
Yeah, I doubt it. But yeah, it's just been tough, man. Like, our folks work hard. It's not easy to build a truck. You know, we don't build pillows there. You're either banged up, you're sore, you get home. You know, we want to be paid for it. We're not looking to be millionaires. We just want a fair wage. I'll be honest with you, our benefits are pretty good. Our deductibles took a little bit of a hit, but we've been paying the same price for our benefits for at least 4 years now. That was proposed to stay the same. But like I said, the deductibles went up. That was another sticking point for some of the people.
Well, as your cost of healthcare, as your cost of benefits go up, that means your wages are going down. As you're taking more out of your pocket to pay for what you had yesterday, your standard of living goes down. This isn't hard to figure out. This shouldn't be difficult for the company to understand that you're eventually going to want to have a reasonable standard of living. If you're going to be the folks out there, you know, sweating, bleeding, aching, destroying your body doing these jobs, because these aren't easy jobs, are they?
No, absolutely not. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a few good jobs, but us senior guys have them. You know, that's just the way it goes. But
that's seniority. Overall,
it is tough work, man. You're building a truck. Nothing's light. Yeah, I just think it's gone unappreciative. Like, I don't know how else to say it.
So, you know, and again, this isn't the first time you guys have been on strike. I think, what, 2019 was the last time?
Yes, sir.
And out of that came?
Honestly, I wasn't happy with what we went back for. It was, if we would have had cost of living, it would have saved us. Nobody could foresee the pandemic, but not having cost of living, you got to have that protection. I understand why the big three are really stuck on it. We've been burned by it. You know, in 98, when I started, the company union agreed that we made a fair wage for our labor. And to keep us at that fair wage, you gave us cost of living. And every October, from October to October, we got a 3% lump sum check that was supposed to keep those in lieu of the compounding raise. But that COLA was supposed to keep us at that fair wage. We were two contracts into that, and they started taking 2 cents per quarter out of our cost of living to help offset healthcare. So over the duration that they've done that, they've taken back $2.76. While it says I pay $28 a week for my benefits, you know, you can add at least another $2.75 an hour to that. That a lot of the younger folks don't understand that where that came from. I've been there. I've seen it all go away. And honestly, it was a tough decision this time. I can see the finish line right in front of me. I got 5 years, I got my 30 years in. These younger folks, man, they got the drive. I hope we can all stick together and win this together.
Yeah. No, and that's an interesting point you make. I mean, you see the end, light at the end of the tunnel. It'd be easy to go, oh, you know what? I don't care. Screw you guys. I'll get mine. I'm going. And the interesting thing is, you know, when we were on the picket line in Toledo at the Jeep plant and in Michigan at the Ford plant and the Mopar distribution center, you know, the old timers were the ones that were like, look, I'm going to be okay. You know, I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm out here fighting for the future so that the younger guys, the people behind me, have the opportunities that I had when this was a really good job. So everyone seems to have this idea that I met anyway, and I don't know how you guys in Mukunji are looking at this, but the future is just as important as the right now. So I'm curious, is that kind of a frame that you guys are that you're seeing as well, or is this, hey, I just want what's right now?
Honestly, I've seen a lot of the older guys kicking in. This job's become to the point where, you know, it's not a legacy job anymore. When they were hiring, I did not want my son getting a job there. It's not the job that it was when I started. You know, these some of the guys I started with, man, it was a badge of honor. Some of the guys, their dad and their grandfather worked there. I was a first generation Mac worker, and I'm probably going to be a last generation Mac worker. You know, it's a shame that that's what it's come to.
Yeah. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Tim Herzog. Tim's a committee man and acting shop chair, UAW Local 677. You want to check out their website, UAW677.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Last question I've got for you. You know, obviously, nobody wants to go on strike. Obviously, nobody wants to miss a paycheck and go through what's going through here. What's it take to get you guys back?
What's it going to take to get us back? I'm going to guess somewhere around 10 to 15% up front. Coal is going to be a must, and we're going to have to work with that 8.5-hour day. Whether they pay it out at time and a half, I think that'll make it a little more palatable for people.
How can they do that? How can they only pay you at straight time if it's over 40 hours?
Because it's a 40-hour work day. They don't have to pay us for our lunch here in Pennsylvania. So they're basically paying us our lunch, so we can't leave the property. If we were working 42.5 hours, they'd have to pay us time and a half for those hours. But being it's just break time and they technically don't have to pay us, that's why it's straight time.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a loophole.
I'll leave it to them to figure out how to take advantage of a loophole. I thought if they took your time, it all time, you know. I get not paying your lunch. I get that. But if they're paying you, we'll see how it goes. But Tim, I wish you guys the best. One day longer, one day stronger. I hope you'll keep us up to date on what's going on, and hope folks will come back and talk to us again and keep us up to date. What's going on, man?
Absolutely, Rick, man. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate it. And I hope folks will find their way out to Macungie. If you're in the Allentown area, by all means, adopt a striker, as we've been saying for years. Anytime you see a picket line, park the car, jump out, put on those comfortable shoes that Obama didn't bother using, and walk around, talk, maybe bring a box of donuts, a cup of coffee, drop a couple bucks in the strike fund, and listen. Don't talk. Listen to what people are saying. Adopt a striker. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. Working people.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1997. That was the day that a group of female employees at the investment firm Smith Barney came to a tentative agreement to settle a sexual harassment lawsuit against the firm. Smith Barney was one of the oldest Wall Street firms, with a reputation for respectability. But behind closed doors, the firm more resembled what the Chicago Tribune described as a fraternity house atmosphere. The accounts women told of their treatment at the firm were lewd and disgusting. In the basement of the Garden City, New York office, there was a room called the Boom Boom Room, where female employees were told to entertain clients. Fed up with this treatment, more than 20 women joined together and filed a class action lawsuit. To settle the suit, the firm agreed to invest $15 million in diversity training, along with settlements to each of the harassed women. Sexual harassment of women in the financial industry was not only a problem at Smith Barney. Female brokers in Chicago filed a suit against Merrill Lynch, who agreed to a settlement with the plaintiffs. Smith Barney also did not learn their lesson. Just over a decade later, the firm again settled another sexual harassment suit to the tune of $33 million. This time, according to Forbes magazine, the suit was filed by four female brokers who accused Smith Barney of preventing them from competing fairly for new accounts, promotions and pay, and depriving women of equal training and sales support. Over the course of 15 years, Merrill Lynch paid out almost $500 million in discrimination suits to women and minority brokers. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, good economic news. Not. The rich are getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. Are you surprised? Are you shocked? But according to new Census Bureau data, the top 1%, their income grew by another 1.5%. They now account for roughly 26.5% of the wealth in the country, of the income held in the country. So you got, you know, one guy out of 100 taking 26.5% of the wealth, jamming that right in his pocket. The top 5%, the next top five, they saw their wealth grow another bit from 23% up to 25%, and the bottom 40% of folks, well, fortunately, it's been rising, but nowhere near what it should be. It went from the collective net worth of the bottom fifth was 27%. Was up 27% to $4.2 trillion from $3.3 trillion in 2019. Their share of the country's wealth actually shrank. So the wealth went up a little bit, made a little bit. Wealth, the percentage down. So rich getting richer, obviously. Poor getting poor. The way it should be. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane. So I saw in WAPO that Kevin McCarthy said that he wouldn't mind being speaker again. I thought.
I'm sure he would.
I really think they have all, well, no, I know they've all lost their minds, what little teeny ones that they had. But, you know, everything that's going on, and then they have these right-wing conservative writers for the Washington Post publishing articles that are just full of lies and propaganda. And I'm going, you know, really? You guys can't tell the truth about anything? I mean, it's just insane.
It's Monday, Alice. That's all I can tell you. Thanks for the thoughts. I appreciate it. Yeah, of course. It's what they do. This is the world that we're in. And as I've been saying for a while, you know, our Republican friends, they just lie a little different now. In the old days, as I said before, there was a kernel of reality. There was some truth in the story. It was just spun a little bit, you know. It's where you could go back and go, "No, this was it. This is true." Now, you know, not so much. Now it's alternative reality. It's I believe crowd, and that's what's so frustrating. Because, you know, you can't argue with I believe. I had someone tell me that they believed that. All of the talk of income inequality was bunk. That if you really wanted to be a millionaire, you could be. And the facts just don't bear that out. What the facts bear out is maybe if you work really hard and you're very fortunate, you might rise one socioeconomic ladder rung. But for the most people, where you're born is about where you stay, and a lot of people will fall a rung. Because, you know, as we've been talking about, these jobs that used to be the legacy jobs. And, you know, it's sad to hear Tim say, look, you know, I don't want my kids doing this job. And look, my grandfather told me the same thing. He said, look, if you become a truck driver, you'll be a failure. Because he saw what was coming. He, at the time, he was living through the effects of deregulation. He was living through Reaganomics. You know, this is, you know, I graduated from high school in 1985. So the effects of Reagan's assault on workers was happening. You know, he said, look, you know, all of these trucking companies, they're going to start going out of business because they can't compete with the brave new world, which is, you know, any idiot with a truck is now a trucking company.
So all of the legacy rights that were in the old world where rates were set and competition was based on service and quality and all of that, that was out the window. No, it was dog eat dog, and he knew it. You know, a guy with an eighth grade education knew this job was not going to be a great one. Now, it took a generation, and I don't want my kids doing it because sadly it is not the job that I started at. And it has gotten progressively worse over the years. And the same.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls. W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.